Before we start today's show, I would like to acknowledge that we are broadcasting to you today on the stolen land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded. This show supports the struggles for land back, restitution, self-determination, sovereignty and treaty for First Peoples.
Slums in some metropolitan centers are coming down, condemned by forward-looking civic governments. Down are coming the bad living conditions that produce bad citizens.
The practical uses of asbestos are very numerous. At least 18,000 articles are made of it.
In the spring, the nature-loving Australian goes bush.
The wife washes and the dishes dry themselves.
It's a serial pest.
Cities within cities, scientifically planned and built, where a man and his family with a small income can live with comfort and dignity as investments in democracy.
Kill your lawn and kick your fence. A show about how we live in the cities and suburbs and the ideologies behind them.
Fridays every fortnight at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. on 3CR 855 AM.
From rubbish tip to you.
That's right, you're listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence with me, Amy, on 3CR 855 AM, a show about how we can learn to think about and live differently in our atomized, boxed-in little worlds. And today, I guess we're going to continue a few themes that we've started on the show. First off, we're going to talk to Ishtar Hope about mutual aid work she does around gender-affirming care for transgender people, and also a bit about housing justice. And then we're going to move on to a panel discussion I recorded 2 weeks ago at the Victorian Quakers Centre on the criminalisation and surveillance of homelessness. It was a fantastic panel. Also, please be aware that there's going to be a number of heavy topics in my discussion with Ishtar and in the following panel discussion today surrounding homelessness, housing deprivation, suicide, sexual assault, and discrimination. If you find yourself needing support, you could always call Lifeline at 13 11 14. If you are a queer person, as the first half pertains to queer issues, you can call Q Life at 1-800-184-527 or visit qlife.org.au. You can also visit Rainbow Door, 1-800-729-367, and their website, switchboard.org.au. Switchboard is an excellent website, and so is Rainbow Door as a phone service for not only getting the support you need, but also connecting you to services. While today's discussion will talk about mutual aid efforts in regards to gender-affirming care, I think it's so important that if you are someone who has not been able to get access to the life-saving healthcare that you need, it's important to exhaust all your options, and Switchboard is a really good place for you to head over to and find out what's available here in Victoria. Another helpful number as well, an organisation for mental health services for queer support, is QueerSpace at 03-9663-6733, queerspace.org.au. I hope you really enjoy these segments today, and see you on the other side.
In the struggle for queer rights, anti-LGBTQIA+ hate groups have historically shifted their goalposts as they lose battles in the broader public arena. As some rights and broader public acceptance has been gained by the LGBTQIA+ community, those hate groups target the less agreed upon and often the more vulnerable. Trans, non-binary, intersex, and the broader gender diverse universe's rights, in particular, have been the major focus of these campaigners in recent times. Gender-affirming care, which can include a range of medical and non-medical ways to affirm a person's gender, has been a major target. One reason that gender-affirming care has been a target is because the broader public knowledge on it is poor, and this ignorance in a system where us gender and sex-diverse folk don't have complete autonomy without the say-so of those in power can have this ignorance weaponized against us. However, it is quite challenging to go after the healthcare of consenting adults. So the easiest prey for these hate groups are gender and sex-diverse children who lack the same rights, self-determination, and autonomy that adults do. And while some of that is there to protect children at a time in their life where they are most vulnerable, can also be abused to harm them in a time in their life when they are most vulnerable and needing help and support. Well, as is often the case in our society, that many organizations of all kinds emerge to try and tackle this issue, the progress is never fast enough to take on an issue where mental health is concerned. In the Australian Bureau of Statistics mental health findings of LGBTQIA+ Australians, 1 in 4 transgender people have seriously thought about taking their life, compared to 1 in 6 cisgender people, that's you normies out there, and 4 in 5 non-binary people have seriously thought about taking their life. On top of this mental health crisis, children in schools are still experiencing stigma, bullying, and discrimination, with one survey showing 35% of students reported that an adult never intervened when hearing transphobic language, and 22.9% of students reported that adults never intervened to stop harassment of LGBTIQ+ students. You can find more information on the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare's website, Australia's Youth Contributions from Young People, the Wellbeing of LGBTIQ+ Young People. So when something like gender-affirming care is being denied to children, a lifeline could be being denied in a significant amount of cases. So this is where community comes in to support. I had the great privilege to sit down and chat with Ishtar Hope, who has been providing mutual aid to those denied access to gender-affirming care. Let's meet her and see what she's doing about this issue.
Well, my name's Ishtar Hope, also known as Artful Dobla Ja. I am an activist and an artist from Nam. I'm originally from northeastern New South Wales. I've lived here for about 8 or 9 years. I've been through a lot. I've been housing insecure. I've lived on the street. I've lived in share houses. I have been a homeless sex worker who lived in brothels. I've also survived sex trafficking as well. And these past 2 years, I've gotten really involved in activism. I guess I've always really loved those movies where the main character goes through all this shit and then they have this turning point where they're like, wow, I've survived all this horrible shit, but the world doesn't have to be like this. What can I do to make things better? Mm. And I guess my radicalization for the most part started when I joined the Renters and Housing Union 2 years ago. I was at a bar called Cafe Gamo. This was a week after the Nazis tried to raid it, and there was like a solidarity protest. And I don't know if you've been to Cafe Gamo, but the chandelier there, it spins around. And I was very thirsty because they had the Tuesday $5 vegan meals, and it was very dry, and there was just a bottle of water on the side of the table, and I drank it. And then I noticed that the ceiling was spinning, which was something that happened to me when I was spiked when I was in a very sexually exploitative situation a couple of years before. And I had a panic attack, and a lady from Rahu came up to me and supported me and was there for me. And then I asked, what's Rahu? And she said, it's like we're like this plucky band of like misfits who come together and try and solve the housing crisis. I'm like, holy shit, I've been homeless. And, you know, like, am I being recruited into the revolution? You know what I mean? Like, and then next thing you know, I started going out to Rahu meetings. I'm like, wow, this is really cool. And I went to a place called Catalyst Social Center. And I'm not joking when I say this. Catalyst, it is like the leftist revolution HQ. Like, all these leftist groups come together and we bond together and we do things together and we network and we fight for a better world. And it is the most beautiful place I have ever been. And I'm just going to spruik Catalyst.
Yeah.
We've potentially been offered another lease, but Ooh. Yeah, I know, right? But we do need more money. The rent's going up, I think, a couple of thousand a month. So we're trying to get donations and people to subscribe. And I've subscribed to keep Catalyst alive. But yeah, it's a really amazing place. And I've met so many friends there. I go to Food Not Bombs. It's incredible. And so much like activism and mutual aid and direct actions not just gets planned there, but gets done there. Well, basically, I know a lot of trans people, and we get our prescriptions through our GPs. However, we realize that we're actually getting extra prescriptions. Mm. We're getting a little bit extra a month. And what we do is I go around the community, because I'm involved in so many activist groups and I'm so active in the community. I know a lot of trans girls.
You would.
Yeah. And I look for either refugee trans women or transgender teenagers who can't get access to HRT because they, like, literally, if you have one unsupportive parent and one supportive parent, the government won't let you take HRT. It's really fucked. And I have a lot of trauma of not being able to have HRT as a teenager. I was actually in the foster care system and I didn't even have any communication with my biological father.
Yeah.
So there was no feasible way for me to have HRT through the system under 18 at all.
Yeah.
And so far I have helped so many.
Yeah.
And the amount of suicide attempts I had when I was growing up due to gender dysphoria, watching these hairs grow through my face, watching myself bulk out, get taller, you know, get a big chin and stuff, it almost killed me. And if I can save just one young trans person's life and give them a better quality of life so they can... Look, unfortunately, passing is something that can be potentially life-saving, but also, you know, trans women, a lot of us do want to pass, and we should have that right. And if you have to wait till you're 18 or 19 to start HRT, often there's, if that testosterone is something that your body is naturally producing, it's going to cause changes that even surgeries might not necessarily be able to remove. And often the only way you can remove the effects of testosterone is to stop them before they happen.
Yeah.
So what I do is I find these young trans people and I help them. And I've already had so many young trans women tell me that I'm saving their life.
It was at this point in my conversation with Ishtar that I was reminded of Jordan Vanderlam's appearance during the 2025 Australian federal election on the project for a squat that he had listed that had led to the property owner's belongings being stolen. And while this piece on the project was slanted against Jordan Vanderlam, it is currently listed on YouTube as TikToker slammed after home posted online gets looted. Jordan Vanderlam actually gave a response that went viral on the internet.
A grieving Victorian woman has been dealt a brutal blow after finding her late father's home looted and trashed by strangers. The twist claims a pro-squatters politician led the looters right to her door.
I'm not rich. I spent 4 years renovating it and every penny basically to bring it to a stage where I could live in it. And then
so this doesn't actually match your own description of what say you're doing, isn't that?
You can like check it up on the street view. You can do a bunch of things. Obviously, I can't visit every single house, which is unfortunate. I am just one person and I'm doing this because I see that there are hundreds of thousands of empty homes in this country and there are far fewer people than that sleeping rough, dying on the street because they don't have access to housing. And I'm just literally here trying to make sure that people have things that they need because I care about them. That's what I'm trying to do. Obviously, there might be better ways to do it. And I would love the government to do that and not me. But I have, you know, I'm not funded to do this stuff. I'm just trying to help people who are desperate and need houses.
So what are the better ways to do it?
Well, that's not a question for me. That's a question for the government. It's not my responsibility to make sure that the government's job is done and that everyone is housed. However, if the government doesn't do that, I want to step in and do what I can to make sure that people have a roof over their heads while there are empty homes.
When I saw that Jordan Vandenlam was like, there's all these people on the street that need housing, I'm going to bend the rules and give them housing, I was like, do you know what? I'm going to do that for healthcare because yeah. I've almost died by living on the street. It is so cold. Yeah. Like the amount of like, it doesn't matter how much you wrap yourself in your sleeping bag, the amount of like cold that just comes through the ground, it is like excruciating. And there's no buildings open at night where you can huddle in. Like it is scary. And I thought, you know what? If Jordan can provide housing for the people that the system doesn't want to have housing, I'm going to do the same for healthcare because, you know, if the system is stacked against us, we do have to take things into our own hands and we do have to band together as a plucky band of misfits. I say that a lot. It's yeah. almost a meme at this point. and we have to basically be the change we want to see in the world.
Online, Ishta posted a comic strip featuring this very issue and how she and her friends are addressing it. And I asked her about the first slide in this comic. In it, you see a young, feminine, transgender teenager facing her two parents. She looks nervous and timid. She says, "Mom, Dad, I feel like I was meant to be born a girl. I'd like to start female hormones so that I can have a body that matches how I feel on the inside." Then the parents say back to her, "Son, you're 16. You're legally our property. We won't let you." I then asked Ishta to elaborate on what this means.
Well, what it is it's literally just transphobia. And it is gatekeeping. And it is parents projecting themselves onto their children and treating them like property. And I'm not talking about small kids. I'm talking about people who are going through puberty. Like puberty is... like, and I say this as someone, like, there are like, if I started HRT at 13 or 14, I would look different. I would be more passable.
Yeah.
And I have to live for the rest of my lives with the consequences that I get clocked as trans sometimes.
Yeah.
I've almost been murdered in a hate crime for being trans. A guy tried to run me over with his car.
Yeah.
And these parents, like, they don't understand that their teenagers are their own people. And, you know, HRT is a life-saving medication. Like, trans teens are killing themselves. And yeah, there might be like this tiny less than 1% of trans people who regret their surgery. I'm going to let you guys in a little on a little secret here, right? By the way, I wasn't talking about surgery. I was talking about HRT.
Yeah.
I had a botched gender reassignment surgery.
I'm sorry to hear that.
But I do not regret that because even though I have no depth, I still feel closer physically to the gender I have always felt, which is female.
Yeah.
And the rate of trans regret is like the amount of trans women I have known who have killed themselves because they feel like they don't pass because they didn't start HRT at a young enough age.
Yeah.
Far outnumbers the amount of people. Like, I've never met a trans person who's regretted their transition. I know that some of them exist.
Yeah.
And basically what this amounts to, what this belief about detransitioners amounts to, is essentially that one cis person who might regret transitioning, their life matters more than tenfold or more trans people who would not be alive if they can't have access to this these procedures, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you're experiencing family violence, free legal support is available. You may need support with obtaining protection, setting up safe parenting arrangements, organising a new visa, getting into safe housing, or making sure bills and bank accounts are split fairly. Community legal centres have expertise in helping people who experience family violence and can provide confidential advice to help you understand your rights and legal options. reach out today for guidance and support, visit www.fclc.org.au and click Get Help to find a community legal centre near you. You don't have to face family violence alone. If you're currently in crisis, please contact Safe Steps on 1800 015 188. Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Do you work in a brothel, massage shop, escort agency, fetish house or dungeon, cam studio or porn set, sauna, short-time hotel, outdoors or on the street, or in any other space where sex work happens? Recent changes to Victorian sex work laws mean that sex workers now have more options for how and where we can work and who we can work with.
To find out more about Victoria's new sex work laws, contact Vixen, Victoria's statewide peer-only sex work organisation, 100% by and for all sex workers on 039-070-9050.
And talk to another sex worker about what the partial decriminalisation of sex work means for you, your workplace and your community. Or check out the Decrim Info Hub at vixen.org.au. Vixen is a 3CR supporter.
Hello, and if you've just tuned in, you're currently listening to 3CR's Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence. You're listening to a conversation I had with Ishtar Hope, a local activist providing gender-affirming healthcare to those denied that care. On Monday the 10th of July, 2023, 8:30 p.m., the ABC's Four Corners program broadcasted its now notorious Blocked, The Battle Over Youth Gender Care, reported by Patricia Carvelis, produced by Leslie Robinson, and researched by Carla Hildebrandt. In the usual doctrine of the Government Guild of ABC's pursuit for fair and balanced media, they centered the thoughts and feelings of those doing harm to a marginalized community over the marginalized community receiving harm. So, following this wisdom, they featured two prominent anti-trans campaigners and spoke not to people doing the good work and education here in our so-called Australia. But they also talked about the CAS report, which is a very notorious piece of anti-trans propaganda done in the United Kingdom, which has only really continued to circulate through the work of anti-trans campaigners, as the quality of the research is not up to the typical standard of proper research in the medical field, and that it has already been thoroughly debunked. However, as you may be aware, the UK is the bastion for anti-trans hate and propaganda, fueled by very wealthy and powerful bigots, sometimes called trans-exclusionary radical feminists, but when you hear their opinions on most things, like Jake Rowling or Sheila Jeffries or Janice Raymond, their thoughts on feminist issues are really just bigotry dressed up in academic language. So following ABC Four Corners, centering anti-trans campaigners and misinformation, Channel 7 took cue and released a documentary on detransitioning with great advertising catchphrases such as, "Is a generation being brainwashed?" and continue to pour out more misinformation, things that were already thoroughly debunked, into the mainstream Australian community. It should also be noted that here in so-called Victoria, in northern Geelong, is Spinifex Press. Spinifex Press being the world-leading publication that exclusively prints books and media that is anti-sex worker and anti-trans and ultimately anti-feminist. So we have a lot of bad faith actors here in so-called Australia circulating misinformation not only about transgender healthcare, but so much about our beautiful gender and sex diverse universe. So it would be no surprise to me if a listener right now, yes, you listening, were uncomfortable with this conversation that I'm having with Ishtar right now. But I ask you this. Think about the open debates that happen globally about women's health care, about women's right to reproductive care, women's right to abortions, women's right to period care. I would not be surprised if you are in support of those things. Perhaps you do not fully understand the in and outs bodies, but you understand the basics of why women need that health care. So when women are denied that healthcare and do risky things in order to get it, do you start blaming them? I hope not. I hope you don't blame women who need life-saving care. And so now I ask you to rethink your position about trans people and trans youth needing similar life-saving care. We now return to Ishtar.
Do the doctors support us if they have to follow really strict guidelines, which means denying HRT to people that politicians have said that they can't give HRT to? Like, unfortunately, in this world, we do have to take things into our own hands as a community.
And that's the thing. It's, I think there are lots of people in the medical profession who either want to do more or maybe fighting for to do more, but are, you know, getting their hands tied, let's just say. And then the conversation sort of moves in this space to it being about whether or not, not so much whether we should have a decision, be able to allow a decision, like trans people should be able to make decisions about their own bodies, about their own care, about their own health care, but whether or not doctors should allow them. But I think what you're doing is actually you're saying trans care in trans hands.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, we need to take this into our own hands.
Yeah.
I was actually, back to the whole purple pingers thing.
Yeah.
I was very involved in that squatting campaign.
Yeah.
Because I really liked the idea of housing not being in the hands of landlords.
Yeah.
If you think about it, landlords are a lot like doctors.
Yeah.
They gatekeep housing.
Yeah.
I was a trans person on the dole and no one would rent to me because I wasn't seen as a desirable tenant.
Yeah.
And that's how I ended up homeless and that's how I ended up sex trafficked. And these sorts of people often don't have our best interests at heart. And sometimes we do have to channel that inner plucky ragtag band of misfits and work together as a team to get these resources out to the community. And what I loved about Purple Pingers was he finds these squats and he has his little network that finds them and he finds homeless people and he gets them into these squats so that they don't freeze to death on the street.
Absolutely.
And he's like one of my biggest role models and I really respect everything he does. Mm. And I think that I know this sounds kind of cringe to say, but in a lot of ways I'm kind of the trans purple pingers, or I'm trying to be. I don't have 100,000 followers yet. I've almost got 2,000, but yeah.
And that's the thing. So people will say, they might raise concern for those people in the squats, right? They might say, well, that squat, that house was empty because they had asbestos and the landlord had nothing to do about it. So what if they get asbestos? But the thing is...
But what if they freeze to death on the fucking street?
Exactly. And
like, how many people are freezing to death on the street? Like, they're gatekeeping houses on the off chance that there's asbestos or a fire trap. Hmm. But the risk, the amount of people who die on the street far outnumbers the amount of people who would be at risk of those things in these squats. In much the same way that the amount of people who would potentially regret getting given HRT by me, like, that amount of people is dwarfed by the amount of people who have explicitly told me I've saved their life by giving them estrogen and cyproterone.
Yeah.
These services often don't do enough.
They're not
going to get hormones to a kid
whose
parents aren't supportive. And this is where grassroots orgs come into effect. If you're a kid and you're listening to this, like a teenager, my personal advice is to get to know as many people as possible. Get to know as, like, talk to people. Talk is cheap. Talk is really important. Network. Get involved in multiple different organizations. Talk to everyone involved. And eventually, if there's something you want, you might meet someone there who has a connection.
Yep.
Go to things like Food Not Bombs. Join your renters and housing union. By the way, if we have people in the union who live with their parents and they join because they want to help because they know that when when they do move out, they're going to need to live in a world where housing is accessible. Mm. And there will be people in these groups who will be able to get you the help that you need. But you're just going to have to ask around and meet as many people and go to as many meetings and events and groups as possible. Like, Rahu is full of trans people because the housing crisis disproportionately affects trans people. Most people I know have to move every 2 months or 3 months. It's crazy. Yep. And the only way they find houses is by basically begging online to cis allies, please, please give me a share house. And often these share houses end up being above market rate because trans people are so desperate for housing that they just have to take what they can get. And it's really heartbreaking. Mm. And we, in a lot of ways, we are second-class citizens.
Yep.
Like, obviously, it's not as bad as what First Nation or African people are going through, although there are First Nation and African trans people who probably have it worse than everyone.
Mm.
But, you know, like, we get the shorter end of the stick in a lot of cases, and I had to move all the way out into the outer western suburbs because I couldn't find a share house in Coburg because they wanted to give the share houses in Coburg to the fucking hipsters with full-time jobs working at some paint shop or something, you know? Like the amount of gatekeeping that exists that puts marginalized people even more marginalized, it's really, really sad. And it leads to problems becoming even bigger problems.
I'm just thinking about people I know in my own experience of just how many times that I just keep moving constantly, the least.
And this isn't normal. Like, we don't have communities. Like, we can't, like, I went and sat in a council meeting and it was all old landowners. And, like, this was in an area that was
common.
This was in an area that was mostly renters. But how can renters be involved in local politics if we have to move rentals from Reservoir to Flemington to Dandenong to Lilydale to Werribee in the space of 12 months? We don't have local communities. We're constantly moving around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, if I even get a hint that there's a trans person in the community who is homeless, I will hunt them down and message them. And I'm like, I am going to make a post for you and I am going to share it with 100 or 200 or 300 or 1,000 people on Instagram and make sure that you find a share house, because I've lived on the street. I was homeless at 20 and was taken in by a sex trafficker who threatened to murder me if I didn't pay off debts. Mm. And that has caused me immeasurable amount of pain. Yeah. This is why I'm so involved in things like the Renters and Housing Union and the Safe Public Housing Collective, because I know that half the trans people I know are having to either move house every 3 months or they're actively homeless and couch surfing. Some of them even live in their cars.
Mm.
Like, this is how bad things are for our community. And it is absolutely crucial that housing and healthcare are provided to the community at all costs. The trans community are already so housing insecure, and more of us are ending up homeless as rents go up, because there is actually less rentals. And there is a current plan by the government to demolish the 44 public housing towers, which is going to lead to thousands of people being homeless. Now, what that's going to do is it's effectively going to mean that the rental market will be oversaturated with people looking for homes. And that in turn is going to lead to rent prices to skyrocket, so that if you are a marginalized trans person, you're not going to be able to find housing. So if you are a trans person, it is in your best interest to do everything you can to save these towers. Occasionally that there are direct actions that come up. We recently had a picket outside one of the towers because people were going to go in there and workers were going to go in there and remove asbestos while residents were still living there.
Yes, I heard about that. Yeah.
We had 200 people rock up. I did a lot of the phone banking for that.
Yeah.
And the workers, they ran away with their tails between their legs. Mm. We can't let these towers get knocked down. The amount of trans people that are going to end up homeless if the housing crisis gets even worse than it is now is ridiculous. Like, we're already basically playing musical chairs with people's couches to crash on. When the people who own these couches end up on the street, it's going to end up even worse.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's not just about the trans community. The people in the housing towers themselves, they need homes as well. They need secure housing. We all need secure housing. And it is really important that we work together to make sure that we live in a world where housing and healthcare is something that everyone can have. And if the powers that be, which includes landlords, like, by the way, most politicians are landlords and they are directly going to benefit from this. We need to create a world where if they try and do this, we stop them from doing this. And we're able to distribute housing, healthcare, and other resources to everyone in the community so that no one gets left behind. And we need to be the change we want to see in the world.
I hope you really enjoyed that conversation. It was a great delight to have Ishtar in the studio to chat about these issues.
If you want to follow Ishtar, you can head over to Instagram and look up Artful Doll Bludger, all one word, and you will find her account with a lot of updates on various organizing she's in particularly Rahu, and some great artworks and comics that she regularly does. And you can find out all about the mutual aid that she does over there. You may have caught in the interview that she had some issues with surgery that she had. She is currently fundraising to get that surgery fixed, and you can head over to GoFundMe, help Ishtar get her botched sex change fixed in Thailand. So her goal is to raise 40k. If you feel like you're able to chip something in, I'm sure it would be really appreciated.
Before we move on to a song that Ishtar selected for us today, I would just like to remind you that if you heard anything today that caused you distress, don't forget those numbers with Lifeline 13 11 14, or for the queer numbers, QLife 1800 184, or for the LGBT plus support numbers, head to QLife at 1800 184 527. qlife.org.au, or Rainbow Door 1-800-729-367, or switchboard.org.au, or Queerspace 03-9663-6733, queerspace.org.au. And again, Switchboard is a fantastic website for you to exhaust all your options in terms of getting the support you need, making friends, finding places that do groups of various different interests. It's a great place to get connected to all the various organizations and services that are available. Now we're going to hear a tune by a local group called the Crop Tops. This song is Liberty Parade. Ishtar selected them for us. They are a Melbourne trans folk punk band, and they do a lot of gigs at mutual aid fundraising events. So catch them next time they're doing something.
I get through the day never really feeling special. Stare at the ceiling, take a walk, maybe even try to get dressed. Don't get the blues on the wrong side of town, you can get lost here. I'm a flower full of aphids, but I'm giving it my best. Wishing that you'd come around, maybe this house would feel like one falling down. Wishing that you'd their eyes on me.
You're listening to 3CR Community Radio 855 AM. Visit the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au/podcast to hear the most recent recording from each show, or 3cr.org.au/streaming to listen live.
They're pulling on the boots in Brazil and wiping off the eggshells in Moorabbin. Fascism's on the march, and we say, yeah, nah.
Yen Up Us Iran is a new weekly program on 3CR dedicated to tracking this rise in Australia, Aotearoa, and all around our increasingly warm little globe.
Every Thursday at 4:30 p.m, we'll be talking to writers and fighters about some angry blighters.
Brothers, sisters, we don't need that fascist group thing.
Welcome back. You're listening to 3CR 855 AM on your dial. You're listening to Kill Your Lawn and Kick Your Fence, a show about how we can share and care for one another on this planet and break out of the little boxes we all tend to live in. Now we're going to hear a bit of a panel that I recorded about 2 weeks ago called Surveillance and the Street, the Recent Criminalization of Homelessness. So let's go straight into that.
Okay, thanks. It's hard to know where to start, really, because I've been involved in this issue for quite some time. And what we have seen over the last probably 1 to 2 years in particular, we've seen council really promote and push the notion that we need security guards on the streets. And this isn't just Melbourne. I was at a meeting in Footscray the other night, and they look like they're going to go ahead with a similar approach there. And now the term they're using for the adoption of security on the streets is called the Melbourne approach, or the Melbourne. So we've got a label to it now. The council in Melbourne is predominantly conservative and driven by business. So business is driving what's happening on the streets with security and compliance officers. So what we are experiencing is one or two compliance officers all dressed in black with about three or four security officers from Crownland Security who have got the contract in the city walking around targeting. At the beginning, it was in relation to aggressive begging and alcohol consumption, but now it's clearly just anyone that's on the streets. I was noticing on the video actually that someone was sitting on a park bench. They're just targeting anyone they don't want in a particular area at a particular time. And the business community, they are really pushing this hard, and as they are in Footscray as well. So, and you know, there are people on the streets who have been long-term homeless. They've got multiple and complex needs. There's many that we know who are traumatized, who've experienced family violence, sexual violence, alcohol and drugs. They've got some significant mental health issues, surrounded by five or six mostly males dressed in black, standing over them, basically bullying and coercing them into moving on. And the whole idea is to move people on. There's no other strategy with this. It's just about removing people off the streets. So we know that people are often linked into services, and that's really important. But we also know that many people in the city actually come to the city because they like being in the city. They have a community in the city. They hang out in the city. It's their place to hang out. And overall, there's no in terms of their impact, there's very little impact in terms of the people on the streets. It's mostly the business sector that's driving this, and their I guess power and ability to drive council towards cleaning up the streets. So that's the experience. And I just quickly, I'll finish. Sorry. The last aspect of this is that at this meeting the other night in Footscray, there was a number of people in the room, and a couple of other people said, "Oh yeah, Wyndham's thinking of doing the same thing." So you know, Brimbank's thinking of doing the same thing. So this approach, this strategy, mm-hmm. could actually increase. So it could actually grow and grow.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, you took a lot of the words right out of my mouth. No, you're right. You're spot on. These security guards have been walking around. I made the mistake of telling them where I slept the other night, and then I was asking for some change. They came up, surrounded me, and said to me, "Oh, what's your name?" And I'm like, "Well, do you really need it?" And they're like, "Well, you're going to have to wait here for the police." And I was like, "All right, I'll wait for the police then." And then they changed their mind. They were like, "Okay, no, we don't want to call the police. Just give us your name." And I'm like, "Oh, my name's Craig." And they're like, "Oh, where do you sleep?" And I'm like, "Oh, just down the alleyway there. There's a little spot that I sleep in." 2 nights later, I came back and they'd bolted down these bumps, so I couldn't sleep in there anymore. Everywhere I go, I see that now, and it's hot. I think it's called hostile architecture or something.
Yep.
Yeah, they design the seats that you sit on in the street so that you can't lay down on them. They've got the dividers, spikes on windowsills, so you can't sit there. And someone said to me the other day, "Oh no, they're for pigeons, but they're spikes like that. A pigeon's not going to care about that, you know. They're big iron spikes." So and apparently, I was speaking to another homeless guy the other day. He stuck to his guns when the security guards came up and said, "You got to move on." And he's like, "No, I'm not moving, not moving, not moving." And he's a really nice guy. This guy wouldn't harm a fly, and they eventually just left him. So I'm not sure if they've actually got any power to actually move you. Like, I know they physically can't grab you, but a lot of people are just intimidated by having these 4 security guards surround you. Mm-hmm. You're sitting there with your hat out or your book, and 5 big burly blokes are standing there going, you know, of course you're going to get up and move. So
yeah. Maybe I can ask Meg to talk about the legal implications then, you know, what powers they actually have and what legal impact it has when they're facing the city doing this on a regular basis.
Yeah, sure. I actually need to acknowledge I'm on the Gunnar Karana lands, unceded, just because I am. And I didn't get a chance before. I might just say in order, like, one thing that I experience going into the city at the moment is that it has this really eerie feeling. Like, so once you've been a part of a community, you're always looking for that community, like, where are they? And the streets seem empty to me. Like, they might be full, but they feel empty to me. And I feel a lot of concern because, from my lived experience, women and children find the city to be a safer place to be if they're homeless because of CCTV and lighting and that sort of thing. And also they are an integral part of that Melbourne city, inner city community. And it is actually a privilege for a lot of people to be able to contribute directly to homeless people in that environment. So it's quite a difficult time. The way in which this is operating is highly questionable, and I expect it could not be the subject of litigation at some point the powers, it's complicated, but I'll try to step it out quite quickly. The focus is on beg arms, and ostensibly on beg arms and drinking in a public place, which are issues that the state government and the courts have a very different view of. They're not prosecuted, and that, you know, there's been a lot of law reform around those issues because of, well, particularly around alcohol consumption, because of deaths in custody, around public begging because it's a poverty-driven offence, and if you're homeless, you've got a special circumstance, which means that it won't actually stand in court. So it's quite, you've got a private security group doing work that is not work, that it's antisocial work, really. And their power is to affect citizens' arrests. There's very specific circumstances that you can affect a citizen's arrest. But as particularly homeless community know, something doesn't have to be lawful to be happening. And I think one of the things around that, I mean, we're Fitzroy Legal Service and a number of other legal services are working in this area and really hoping that there will be homelessness issues can be difficult to build advocacy networks around that are broad ranging. But I think actually in the community, there is a lot of support for homeless community. And I think increasingly there's a really clear recognition that the cost of living and the housing crisis is just a fact. There's also a really reasonably high level of awareness of the increasing number of women and women experiencing family violence, children escaping from family violence that are homeless as well. I feel like that general awareness is present. But this particular action by the council, as Greg mentioned, is driven by some voices. And I think one of the issues is that injustice often thrives on relying on people not being empowered to take action against those authority figures. So it's incumbent on all of us in the community to be really committed allies at the moment and take this really, really seriously, because it is really serious. And I guess from our perspective, it's also complicated by the demolition of public housing issue and also by bail law reforms. So a lot of offences, like in a practical sense, that homeless community experience are a lot of offences that relate to activities that many people do, but they don't get prosecuted for them because they're not in public spaces. They're not relying on public spaces as their lounge. And, you know, sometimes dependence issues are highlighted as being central. They are central in a sense, but there are a lot of people in the state of Victoria that take drugs and alcohol in their lounge rooms, and it's just not an issue. But if you are poor and if you are struggling with housing, which can actually happen to anyone, as we're seeing increasingly, I think that's becoming more and more obvious, that many, many people are only one paycheck away from homelessness. You can end up with a lot of minor offences. And what we've got also is this state government pushing really hard. I mean, they've introduced the first tranche of bail reforms. They're introducing the second tranche of bail reforms, which is a total backflip on the commitments they made after Veronica Nelson passed away in custody. And as a consequence of those bail reforms, it means that really we're looking at a highway into prison. And I think that's an extraordinary thing when you think about the cost effectiveness and the common sense and the logic of that, of preferring to spend all of these resources on criminalizing people and incarcerating people as opposed to supporting them and housing them. It's something that I think that we need to think structurally about, and I really hope that, I have hope, but I think it will take a lot of allies and a lot of educative work for the community, because I think the other thing is that these narratives that are run, the sort of shocking violence narratives that are run, they're quite easy to run. But they're not representative. I mean, the most family violence happens in the home, and that's not a news story, but maybe it should be, because, it's all upside down at the moment, but we're working on it. But I also want to acknowledge the grief and also the internalized stigma, because that's, something I feel ashamed about, just being in a system that's doing that to people, that's expressing so much hatred towards people who are in circumstances of hardship. That's all I'd like to say.
Thanks right very now. Much, Meg.
Yeah, I'd just like to back up what Meg's saying and just remembering who the homeless community is. Indigenous folks make up 2% of our population, yet make 20% of the homeless community. Something like 40% of the homeless community is below 24. Something like in the, I think 15% are under 12. So we're talking, the state and the people that have resources are putting money into prisons, knocking down public housing rather than building public housing. One of the explicit reasons for the security is public intoxication. Like, go to any pub, people are being intoxicated everywhere. Yet they're not being criminalised. They're not being prosecuted. Right in front of us, what we're seeing playing out is that capitalism, the contradictions between rich and poor, the powerful and the powerless. It's happening right in front of our eyes. And I guess the other thing I'd like to say is, like, the space that space that used to be taken up by, I guess, when the late, not that I'm a big supporter of the Labor Party, but when the Labor Party had more of a conscience, and I think when the union movement was more active in standing up for people and standing up for communities that don't have access or don't have the resources to stand up to council and the state, they vacated that space. And so I guess, I'd like to back up what Meg's saying, and then it's up to people like us, is to put pressure on these guys, because, you know, they claim there's been 34 unspecified acts of violence over 2 years. That's just over one a month. Anyone that's worked, that's been homeless or worked in a service where, you know, in a homeless service, that could be someone telling someone else to get fucked. You know, do you know what I mean? It could be someone having a cigarette in front of. So that's no justification for having a private militia at all. So it's really important that these opportunities, like, I find it's really important that we get together and talk about this stuff and share our experiences and start talking about what we can do to challenge what's happening.
And you are just listening to Surveillance in the Street, the Recent Criminalization of Homelessness, a panel discussion featuring experts and people with lived experience of homelessness. I'm going to have a look on the 3CR website to see if it's been uploaded anywhere in full. And I'll drop a link to that panel so that people can listen to it in full. If not, maybe I can upload the full thing to my show. I'll have a little investigation. But in the meantime, stay tuned for Think Again, and I'll see you in a fortnight's time to talk about killing some lawns and a recent mine that's being built in Gunai Kurnai country, and some interviews I did with some local residents. So stay tuned for that in a fortnight. Now we're going to hear Local Positioning Systems by Sonia, who was on the show a little while ago, which was part of the art installation, the sound installation that was happening at the event the panel was happening.
I believe that space should be reclaimed, particularly for housing. I think that the COVID-19 public health response raised some really interesting questions and highlighted some contradictions.
You know, at the start of COVID, the state was talking about responding to COVID-19 explicitly as a sort of war response. You know, I find this really problematic and sinister language.
Because, I mean, any war within a community, you know, it leads to outcomes that always increase resources for police and military.
You know, recognize that these attitudes are ultimately like a result of
living in this kind of
explicitly unfair capitalist society, you know?
I regret not having to deal with those issues of movement control and illegality of movement, which, you know, is something, you know, we as, you know, involved in activism have thought about these things before. You know, you know, it was great practice for the state, right? Fucking training for them on how they would do things.